What's the point of life when it doesn't make sense is the question for today. Now, there are a number of puzzling questions that keep me thinking. Why, for instance, does the milk that I use every morning to make coffee froth up like crazy one day and not the next? Same milk, same process, same frother, different outcomes. I don't understand how that works. How is it that a large, huge, sprawling city like Sydney can run its public transport system right on time? The timetable for the Manly Ferry leaves Circular Quay at 3 o'clock, that's what it says, and exactly at 3 o'clock it leaves. And even if you didn't have a radio to check the time, you would know for sure by watching the ferries come and go. And the electronic message board on platform 2 at the train station says the next train to Central and the airport will arrive in 2 minutes. And it does. How you can even set your watch by it. How does that happen? How can the Crusaders work so hard for 8 years with Toddy at the helm and miss winning the Super Rugby finals, and then along comes Scott Robinson and he bags the catch first time up? How does that work? Now, don't be worried, because these questions don't keep me awake at night. But then the questions keep coming and they become more worthy of serious inquiry. How come there are still loads of people in this town waiting to have earthquake repairs on their homes completed? And some, who I know, still waiting to have them started. Why have many of our rivers and streams seemingly dried to a trickle in this land of abundant water and rain? And how come families suddenly torn apart by warring political factions find themselves on opposite sides of walls and barriers, not of their own making, walls that are built to keep people out? North and South Korea is a case in point. India and Pakistan. Israel and the Palestinian territories. And our friends Heimbart and Christian from Berlin, who one day, 13th of August 1961 to be exact, left their home in Berlin to go to work in the city, and when they returned at the end of the day found a wall blocking their way. There was no meal with their families that night, and there never would be, as it turned out. They lived the rest of their days in a high-rise in what became known as West Berlin. How could that have happened? And how did they respond to that? And then the questions become even more difficult. There were times in Sydney last weekend when I looked in vain to see a white Australian. Where had they gone? Have they vanished? And how do we manage in our own worlds, even here in New Zealand, as we become an increasingly mixed community of people from different nations with different religious and different cultural traditions? It's happening. We will not stop this. How come children born into the same family turn out to be so different from each other? Why do some people get cancer and others don't? There's no rhyme nor reason to that question, it seems. And why do some suffer enormous loss? And what do we do if it happens to us? How come Jerry, who was loved by and liked by all who knew him, died of cancer within 4 weeks of him riding the rail trail in central Otago with us a couple of years ago, and neither he nor anyone else knew that he was unwell? There are mysteries upon mysteries in this life that we're born into, and it seems the answers elude us, no matter how mightily we might try to understand them. And that was the problem for Job. A long and epic story told for what purpose? Now, Job was a farmer, a landholder, happily married, getting great prices at market for his labours, and then boom! Everything that he'd counted on to give his life meaning and purpose went down the tubes. Everything was undeserved, and that's what this story is about, undeserved suffering. I mean, Here was a man doing everything right, it seems, and then he was blindsided and sent reeling. We didn't read the early part of this. While Job's children were having one of their parties at the home of the oldest son, a messenger came to Job and said, "The oxen were ploughing and the donkeys were grazing in the field next to us when the Sabaeans attacked. They stole the animals and killed all your farmhands." Then while he was talking, another messenger arrived and said, "Bolts of lightning struck the sheep and the shepherds fried, burnt to a crisp." And while he was talking, another messenger came and said, "The Chaldeans, coming from three directions, raided the camels, killed the lot, and massacred the camel drivers." And while he was talking, another messenger came and said, "Your children were having a party at the home of the oldest brother when a tornado swept in off the desert and struck the house. It collapsed on the young people and they died, and I'm the only one to get out alive and tell you what happened." Now, that's not happened to me. And I suspect to the extent that it happened to Job, it's not happened to any of us. Job got to his feet, ripped his robe, shaved his head, then fell to the ground and worshipped. Listen to these words. "Naked I came from my mother's womb. Naked I'll return to the womb of the earth. God gives, God takes. God's name be forever blessed." And not once throughout all of this did Job sin. Not once did he blame God. But that's not where it ended. As if losing your means of income, job loss or redundancy, and all your children wasn't enough, worse was to come, believe it or not. Job breaks out with terrible sores. Job was ulcers and scabs from head to foot, the record says. They itched and they oozed so badly that he found himself a piece of broken pottery to scrape. And then he went and sat on the trash heap amongst the ashes. And his wife said, "Still holding on to your precious integrity, are you, Job? Curse God and be done with it." And he said to her, listen to this, "You're talking like an empty-headed fool. We take the good days from God, why not also the bad days?" And not once through all this did Job sin. He said nothing against God. But, and now nothing makes sense, and so he indulges self. And in the passage that Eric read, we hear Job crying out, and he ends with the question, "What's the point of life?" In the face of cataclysmic loss, everything that had defined Job, given him an understanding of who he was, had gone. Gone south, gone forever. And how many of you have been at that point once, twice, maybe more times than you care to recall? Why didn't I die at birth? The worst of my fears have come true. What I've dreaded most has happened. And so we turn again to that ancient wisdom and stand at the crossroads and look and ask, where are the ancient paths? Where is the good way? And how should we walk in it? For we know, and we need to know the answer, because that's where we'll find rest for our souls. The words from Jeremiah. Well, Job's story is a long one, and it revolves around the conversation he has with his three friends, Eliphaz from Teman, Bildad from Shuhar, and Zophar from Naamath. That would be like us today saying Jack from Rangiora, Bill from Kashmir, and Jeremy from Ashburton. Three of his friends heard about his plight and decided to visit him and talk him through his distress, and they horrified with what they saw. They were literally horrified. They saw Job, sores from head to foot, a shell of a man, and the life drained out of him. And they did one thing right. For the first 7 days, they sat with him without saying a word. And to their credit, they didn't start talking until after Job had had his say. It's a great story to read if you want to become a counselor or a therapist. It'll give you a really, really clear picture about how not to attempt to help people, how not to have a conversation with someone in deep distress. After Job had spoken, his three friends reply. More than once they speak, and they know exactly what Job has to do if he's to get better. Words flow off their tongue, golden words. They appear to know so much. It's absolutely astonishing. Here are the three experts in real living. Well, it seems that just like roadkill attracts the hawks, sufferers attract fixers. But please tell me, what do you say to a person who's just lost their job? What do you say to a mother whose child has just died? What do you say to the man who you know is as fit as a fiddle and has just been told he's got cancer in one of its myriad forms? The short answer is nothing. Because there is nothing to be fixed. There is nothing that can be fixed. Nor is there necessarily anything to be understood. And in that regard, I can remember Fugie, my dad, saying to me some years after Jean, his wife, my mum, had died. He was an elder, right, in the Presbyterian Church in Kandata, and he had these communion cards that he used to deliver at the three-monthly, at the quarterly communions. And people would talk to me, he'd say, and I would say to them, yes, yes, I understand. But he said, I didn't have a clue. Apparently, and he knew that now, because apparently what people were saying to him, as he talked about things following Jean's death, they were saying, I understand. And he was saying to himself, no, they don't. There are times, I suspect, when the smart and the compassionate thing to say is something like this. I'm very sorry this has happened. Nothing about it makes any sense to me. I actually don't know what to say. Where's the kettle and I'll make a cup of tea? So read Job, if you will. It's a long and at times a depressing read. Learn from the three friends and observe carefully what they're trying to get Job to say. They were trying to get Job to say, God, it's all your fault. Curse you, God. You're the cause of all my worries and all my problems. That's what they suggest. That's what they were suggesting. Oh, it takes them a million words to say it. But that's what they're after. Just like Job's wife, who was urging him to curse Yahweh. And here's one of the story's punchlines. The man or woman of faith, in the face of catastrophe, says, I take the good days from God. Why not also the bad ones? That's wisdom. And in a strange sort of way, that's all there is to it. That's all we can say. That's all we can conclude. I take the good days from God. Why not also the bad ones? And so before we finish this morning, let's just take a step backwards and remind ourselves what this is all about. Do you recall me suggesting some weeks ago now that we now have very few points of contact with non-churchgoers out there? One of the few points of contact that makes sense to me are that whoever we are, whatever the color of our skin, whatever our ethnic or cultural or religious traditions, we all share, all of us, out of our common humanity, the questions that life throws at us. Where are you hiding? Why are you angry? What's the point of life when it doesn't make sense? And we need to be ready to sit with anyone and be useful when it comes to their questions, because buried within the question is another question. Where is God when it hurts? Well, how do we come to terms with the tough times in our lives? And so it turns out that there are many things, not just some things, many things that we do not understand. And that's where Job got to at the end of it all, in spite of his mates who I have no doubt tried to do their best. Job knew at the end that all that counted was a truly contrite spirit and acceptance of the mysterious and unknowable. And so at the very end of that passage, of that book, Job says, Yahweh, I'm convinced, I know it, I'm convinced that you can do anything and everything. Nothing and no one can upset your plans. You asked me, who is this muddying the water, ignorantly confusing the issue, second-guessing my purposes? And I admit it was me. I was the one. I babbled on about things that were far beyond me, and I made small talk about wonders way over my head. And you said, Job, listen. Listen, Job, and let me do the talking. Let me ask the questions. I admit I once lived by rumors of you, but now, having gone through all of this, I have it firsthand. From my own eyes and my own ears, I'm sorry. Please forgive me. I'll never do that again, I promise. And get this, I will never live again on the crumbs of hearsay, crumbs of rumor. I'll never again live on crusts of hearsay, crusts of rumor. You see, no one of us, not one of us can live our lives based on rumors of God. That won't keep us going. It won't keep you going. It won't keep me going. It won't sustain us. And Job eventually gained firsthand experience of Yahweh and confessed, I'm sorry, Lord, forgive me. I'll never do that again. During the week, and I'm not sure where I came across this, I mean where I found it, I came across this little poem. It's from a book called Poems for the Adult Children of Life. It's called I'm Tired and I'm Whipped. I'll read it to you. I'm tired. I'm whipped, but I'm too dumb to quit, and I'm too smart to let life go by. I'm working really hard to find truth in my own backyard. I've done everything but to die. I took the long way around on a short ride to town, and I found a pass where few have been. And on the way, I gained a love, I lost a friend. I scraped my knees, learning to please. I started out with no choice, but somewhere, somehow, on the way, I found my voice. And you see, in the end, Job's life was restored, and what had happened? Well, I think Job found his voice. That's the first key to the answer. Because the record says God blessed Job's life later even more than his earlier life. He ended up with 14,000 sheep, 6,000 camels, 1,000 teams of oxen, and 1,000 donkeys. And I've got no idea how many stock units that is. I think it's about 50,000, which is a big farm. He also had 7 sons and 3 daughters. He named the first daughter, these are lovely names, listen to this, Dove. The second he called Cinnamon, and the third he called Dark Eyes. There wasn't a woman in that country as beautiful as Job's daughters. And their father treated them as equals with their brothers, providing them all with the same inheritance. A good man, you see. Job lived to see his children and his grandchildren, 4 generations of them. Then he died, an old man, a full life. See, this story turns out to be one of those stories where the answer to the question is not in the last chapter, it's in the last 3 words. In the last 3 words, and here's the second key to the answer, the question, what's the point of life when nothing makes sense? Job was able to say at the end of it all, my life has been lived fully. So what's the point of life when nothing makes sense? There was no magic in this answer of Job's. There was no fancy footwork. There was no sleight of hand. When we come out the other end and we can say, my life was full, it seems to me that that makes sense. There is no point in life when it stops making sense, except to be able to say at the end that our lives have been lived fully and as far as possible, gloriously. And so, sisters and brothers in Christ, what more would you want to be able to say at the end of your life than that it has been a full one?